up to the forest floor below, making a beeline for Sheba. I have no idea if I'll even survive the fall, but to heck with it. I'm committed now. I leap through the air, over the heads of the dozen or so players marching through the jungle below me. A few of them point. Some even curse, realizing I'm going to beat them to the LM. I focus on Sheba, hitting charge strike continuously until I finally get within range and it activates. I go from falling to flying, sailing directly toward Sheba to land a katana strike that causes the massive beast to let out an ear-shattering roar. Sheba uses thunder roar. Your shadow absorbs the attack. I hear the death cries of a couple of the raiders as the roar goes off, and then Sheba spins about to face me with a tail swipe. I narrowly duck under it. The beast roars at me with a mouth that's big enough to swallow me whole. My heart is in my throat. My shadow copy is down, and I'm facing a legendary monster. Solo. I'm in for the fight of my life. Chapter 25. Sheba. I get in two quick slashes on Sheba's nose, and then blow my retreat in a backflip, more from fear than strategy. The beast moves as fast as its smaller cousins, but being twice the size, the claws and bites are much harder to dodge. Don't panic, I tell myself. Just focus on its attacks. I give up attacking for a while and do just that. I study and anticipate, leaping to the side, using as much room as I can within the tight confines of the jungle. I'm faintly aware of the party of raiders when they arrive, but I'm too focused on Sheba to see who they are or pay attention to what they're saying. I get the distinct sense they're pissed at me, though. I use that as a motivator. Dying right now would be added embarrassment in front of a crowd relishing to see my demise. Sheba rears back with a move I haven't seen before, and I blow my active dodge in response. I shift to the side in a blur as its jaws clamp down on the space I was standing in. I quickly check my log. Sheba uses Savage. You dodge the attack. Phew. I've got to be sure not to get hit by that one. My confidence builds as I predict and duck under another tail swipe. I flank the beast to hammer it with a series of stabs to its left paw, and then roll away when it swipes at me with the same. I check its HP and am chagrined to see I've only done 1% damage to it. Eesh. Still, it is damage. It's just a matter of keeping it up, and not getting hit in the meantime. Sheba rears her head back again. Sheba readies Thunder Roar. Oh man, I haven't recast Shadow Copy yet. I do so and complete the spell milliseconds before the AoE goes off. I hear more death cries from the guild members watching me. My heart rate continues to soar as the battle goes on. Every second I'm on the edge, every attack I dodge could possibly be my last. 5 minutes go by with little movement either way. Me dodging, Sheba attacking. I've got to go on the offensive, or this fight will never end. I start to work in hits between my dodges, striking as fast as I can. I get hopeful when I see a large number of critical attacks that go off, doubling my damage output. I check its HP. 95%. I don't have Shadow Copy up anymore, so I do a quick backflip to recast the spell. Then I get an idea. I save my stamina, dodging passively, and then blow an active dodge when it tries to bite me with Savage again. Then I see the moment I've been waiting for. Sheba readies Thunder Roar. The big panther rears back, and I go all out. In the 2 or 3 seconds it takes for its roar to go off, I land a dozen hits to its black furred hide. My shadow copy disappears, but I keep on slicing. Only when it lets loose with a tail swipe do I back off to dodge again. Hollers of rage or disbelief emerge from the crowd. I check Sheba's HP and see it's now down to 85%. Holy crap, it worked! I can do this! I keep the strategy going. 75%. 65%. 55%. It feels like I've been going at this for over an hour, but I no longer have a true sense of time. Reality is measured in cycles of thunder roar and keeping myself alive in between. I memorize the attack cycle and the slight variations that come with it. I'm in a self-induced trance by the time I glance at Sheba's health bar and see it's down to 15%. 2 more rounds. My adrenaline starts to spike again as the end nears. Sheba does thunder roar, and I squeeze in enough hits to get it down to 6%. One more, one more. I keep dodging and recast Shadow Copy early in anticipation, making sure I have it up for the final victory. Then something disastrous happens. Sheba uses Savage. Your shadow absorbs the attack. What the? I didn't mean for it to do that. I know the cycle by heart now. I've got about 5 seconds before it uses Thunder Roar, and there are 11 seconds still left on my recast timer for Shadow Copy. I can't believe this. I've screwed up at the very last moment. I'm about to die. 6%! I tried doing damage to kill it faster, but it's no use. I'd need to backstab it right now to kill it fast enough. A thought pops into my mind. I have no idea if it will work, but it's the only chance I've got. I turn and run. I sprint for the tree line. The ground beneath me shakes as the beast gives chase. I jump onto a tree trunk and sprint up it before arching back to jump off again. In midair, I see Sheba below me, rearing its head. Sheba readies Thunder Roar. I use retreat and perform a flying backflip in midair that places me directly behind the beast. As my feet hit the ground, I use hide, triggering the permissive for backstab. I go for it. Twin kunai blades pierce Sheba's haunches as I jab her with all my might and pray that it's enough. An area-wide message appears. Reese has defeated Sheba. You defeated Sheba. You gain 500,000 experience points. Congratulations, you have gained a level. 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 You are now level 48. You find a Sheba's Fang. Congratulations, you have earned a new title, Sheba Slayer. Congratulations, you have unlocked a perk, Plush Sheba. I'm trembling. I'm exhausted. I collapse to my knees as the air fills with the roar of massive applause and cheers. I stare around me to see not just the raiding party, but over 100 players gathered all about. The air is abuzz with excitement as they run in to slap me on the back. That was amazing! How'd you do that? You're better than Aiko. What's your agility at? Must be 1,000! 0 hits! Pro, dude. GG. In all the confusion, I sense something and look up to see a tall elven woman standing on the tree branch above me. Aiko. Our eyes meet. I'm not sure how to react. Her face is unreadable. At first, I think she might smile, or perhaps even give a nod of acknowledgement. But she doesn't. So, I do so first. At that point, she cuts her eyes away from me and fast travels away. Chapter 26. Taste of Victory. I'm still reeling with emotion when I log off to give my senses a rest. The thrill of what I've just accomplished has me on a high like I've never experienced before in my life. I actually feel like I've just cheated death. I check my livestream page and see it now has over 500 subscribers and over 100 new messages. I've become a celebrity overnight. I spend a few minutes reading through them, continuing the celebration which started in the forest and that lasted almost 20 minutes. Most of the messages are adulations for soloing Sheba. A few are from high-level thieves offering to buy the Fang for upwards of 200k. I put those to the side for consideration later. Then I see a couple from what has to be Aiko supporters. They tell me it was pure luck, or that I'm a hacker. I junk those ones. Then I see one I can't ignore. From Aiko. Don't go thinking you're hot stuff from what you did today. Few people know this, but it's actually easier to solo a boss than to kill it with a party. Plus, that was a low-level LM with only one AoE. We'll see how you do against the Beast Kings. Then we'll see if you're really any good. Sickness fills my stomach as I read her message, and I'm reminded of the nasty look she gave me in the jungle. I want to ignore it. Like it's sour grapes, and she's just writing something nasty to tear me down. If so, it's working pretty well. What she says both makes sense to me and doesn't, though. And that has me feeling uneasy. She's right about the one AOE. If Sheba had had more, I definitely would have been screwed. But what did she mean by, it's easier to solo than fight with a party? If that's true, then that means I have a knowledge gap. I need to figure out what I'm missing here. I still feel crummy, though. Like maybe it was easy or just luck. It sure didn't feel like it. It's amazing how one person's message can negate the effect of hundreds of others. It makes me mad and insecure all at once. I reach out to the one person I know who can help me interpret what Aiko sent. Me. Hey, Val, are you there? Val, Helena. Yes? Me. Can I see you for a sec? Val, Helena. For the great Sheba Slayer? Of course. We agree to meet up in Swifttide at the Saltwash Inn. It's one of the main hubs in the Shard, where players often go to celebrate after raids. Sea shanty music fills the air when I enter, as does the subtle murmur of pleasant conversation and laughter, along with the clink of mugs filled with frothy ale. The sweet aroma of baked fish pies and roasted meat hits me next, making my stomach growl. It must be past lunch now, and I'm probably hungry in real life. You can actually eat food in-game, and while it does taste like food and give you buffs, it unfortunately doesn't fill your actual stomach. If it did that, I don't think anyone would ever log out of Crystal Shards. I see Val Helena in the corner of the tavern. She's in paladin mode, but seated with her is the entire guild. They all stand as I approach, letting out cheers and applause.
The Sheba Slayer!
Zeke raises his mug to me, then thrusts one into my hand.
You kicked butt, man!
Well done, Rhys, Sylvie claps for me.
The three dwarfs of Team SVR each smash their mugs sloppily against mine and congratulate me in turn.
Tops, yo! To the no-hit wonder! You owned that thing!
A smile's on my face before I even know it.
Thanks, guys.
Val Helena smiles at me from across the large round table as we all sit.
Sorry, she says. I was planning to surprise you with this later, but when you messaged, I figured there was no sense in waiting. You did something pretty amazing today, Rhys. Congratulations.
I really hope she thinks so.
Thanks. I don't know how you did it, Jack says. I was watching your stream, and I know I would have totally screwed that up.
You're on my stream? I ask. Val Helena gives a goddess laugh.
We all are.
That takes me back a second.
But a proper cheer,
Val Helena raises her mug.
To Rhys, Ragnarok's first dodge tank and the soloer of Sheba. To Rhys, they all shout.
We clink mugs and chug at the ale. It tastes weird and bitter to me, since I don't drink at all, but I get a buff that lasts 30 minutes that's a plus to TP regen. This wasn't the kind of meeting I was expecting, but it starts to feel like the one I needed when the conversation starts to flow. I give a play-by-play recount of what happened, and actually get a rush from reliving the story. Everyone else seems to as well. We order another round of ale and food to enjoy. It's the first time I've ever done anything like this in-game, and I have to admit, it's more enjoyable than I imagined it would be. I knew there were entire guilds that did nothing but this kind of stuff, that socialized more than adventured, and now I'm beginning to understand why. This is actually kind of fun. After a while, Val Helena gets up and comes over to me. She rests a hand on my shoulder as she stoops to whisper in my ear.
You wanted to talk about something?
She motions her head toward a side table, and we leave the rest of the guild as they continue to have a blast. Team SVR is entertaining everyone by bickering over which of them does the most damage. We move a few tables away, and Val Helena takes a seat across from me, folding her hands atop the table.
So, what's going on?
Nothing really, I say. I start to fear that maybe I'm making too big a deal out of it. Or maybe the guild has just cheered me up so much that it doesn't really matter anymore.
Well, you messaged me for something.
What is it? I sigh, and then forward her the message.
Aiko sent me that. Maybe I'm being thin-skinned about it, but what do you make of it? Is what she's saying true?
Val Helena's smoky gray eyes shift back and forth as she reads the message in her HUD. She doesn't say anything for a moment, then she shifts her eyes to me.
What she says is true. It is sometimes easier to solo, but don't let that diminish what you've accomplished, Rhys. Not one bit.
I have mixed feelings about her reply.
She must sense it, because she reaches over the table to place both my hands in hers. Hey, what you did today was nothing short of amazing. You understand? Your skill, your reflexes got you through that. But more than that, it was your determination. You never quit. Even when you thought you'd blown it, you found another way to survive. That's not experience. That's instinct. Talent.
I'm speechless.
You've taken a career path that's different than a lot of players, Rhys. You can't fail, and that's what Aiko saw in that fight.
Knowing her?
Yeah.
It probably scared the crap out of her.
Are you serious? Look, you've never done this before, so you've got no frame of reference. But not everyone can do what you just did, even with that scroll.
Really?
Who knows? Maybe getting yourself fixed up had some kind of added benefit. It was a nano process, right?
Yeah, it was.
What's she saying?
You mean it gave me some kind of in-game superpower?
She laughs.
I don't know about all that. But hey, it's nano, so anything's possible.
Or maybe your reflexes are really just that good. I mean, you were looking like Maxis out there.
Who?
Maxis. He's like the top player on the PvP shards.
Those games are all reflex-based, and he plays one of the toughest classes to master. You were moving like him.
I've never even heard of him.
She chuckles.
I keep forgetting your whole career until now has been spent in the mines.
You said she was right, though, about soloing being easier. How can that be?
Val Helena leans back in her chair, lost in thought, crossing her massive legs to rest her hands atop her armor-plated knees.
You had power attack on warrior, right?
I faintly recall the ability.
Yeah?
Well, all mobs have the same kind of thing. When it's just you fighting it, they don't gain a lot of rage. But when you've got a damage team going all out, they build rage really fast and can use their special attacks more often.
Ah. I'm getting the picture now.
So, if people were helping me kill it, I never would have been able to predict when it would do its special attacks.
Right. And it would do them more often, too.
But also, tanking is not just about avoiding damage. It's about making sure the mob stays on you and doesn't attack the rest of the party.
Like using Warcry.
Yes, that's the main skill. But you also need other ways to make sure it keeps seeing you as a threat.
Like how?
Doing more damage? Magic attacks?
Magic?
Yeah, I'm surprised you weren't using any shadow magic. That made it even more impressive, really.
I've got no clue what she's talking about. But then I remember my boss fight to unlock ninja.
Oh, wait! Like that purple mist that ninja frog guy used to poison and paralyze me?
Yes, exactly.
Ninja has a lot of debuff magic like that to help with both tanking and keeping threat.
Jeez! So I could have been using that?
Man, the fight would have been a lot easier if I could have paralyzed it every now and then.
Yep.
So again, your ignorance has been the best schoolmaster for you, Rhys.
She cracks a laugh, and I chuckle along with her.
I guess so.
She also mentioned multiple AoEs. How am I supposed to handle those?
I don't know.
She shrugs.
I'm no ninja, but maybe upping your intelligence to reduce the recast time?
I'd never thought of that.
I don't know if it's worth wasting points on, though. You need like 50 in a stat to see any decent reduction.
Yeah, I'll really need to think about that.
Okay, let's get back to the party. Val Helena stands. We're being too antisocial over here.
I check the time. I've spent well over an hour in here already.
Actually, I probably need to get going.
Hey, I know you're on a timeline. But you gained what, 14 levels today? You can work on it tomorrow. Come have some fun. Instantly, I'm reminded of my new deadline, and the fact that I can't share any details of why I need to progress to 85 in just a couple days with Val Helena. At least I can share it with Gilly when I meet her offline. Oh, crap. That's only a few hours away, and I still haven't given any thought of what to wear. Actually, I've got to go for another reason. Oh. Real-life stuff? Kinda, I say, then look up at Val Helena sheepishly. Hey, Val, do you kinda know what's appropriate to wear on a date? Her eyes go wide for a second. What? I let out a sigh. I'm going to meet Gilly for the first time in a few hours, and I have no idea what to wear. She lets out a laugh. No kidding! Wow, you two really are special. I know it's stupid to have asked you. I'm sorry. She looks over her shoulder and yells, Guys, keep the party going. I'll be right back. Val Helena then shoots me a party request. Come with me. Chapter 27. Shopping at Bloomingdale's. Val Helena and I head to the center of Swifttide, where the main spawn point is located. Check your map, she says. You should see another spawn point option here that says Nexus. I do, and when I focus on it, I fast travel along with Val Helena. I materialize in a white, marble-tiled hallway that's filled with glowing blue portals on either side. It bends in a curve, and above each portal, I can see the name for various shards inside the game world. You have entered the Nexus. All game attributes and abilities are now disabled. When entering a new shard, some abilities may be restricted. What is this place? A shortcut, Val Helena says. You can cut between shards without having to log out and back in again. I'm surprised how many people don't know about it, though. Oh, I say. Cool. So where are we going? A place where you can try on some real clothes? We walk around the bend of the vacant corridor and wonder if it isn't more of a ring with how tight the curvature is. We pass by portals labeled Steamworks, Galaxia, and Apocalypse Z. I don't know the game genres for certain, but the names seem pretty obvious. We stop at one marked Urbania and enter. We rematerialize on a street corner of what looks like a major city in pre-war America. New York, I think. It's nighttime, and honking traffic moves steadily on well-paved streets lined with flashing signals flanked by high-rise buildings. People bustle past us on the sidewalk, and I can't tell if they're NPCs or players. Welcome to the True Life Shard of Urbania. All combat abilities are disabled. No combat, I say. What kind of game is this? It's a life sim, Val Helena says, and I notice her clothing has changed. Gone is the paladin armor, replaced by a knee-length gray skirt, low heels, and a white silk blouse. Her 8-foot-tall figure looks even more stunning in regular clothes than she does her battle armor. Most of the population spends their time in here, she says. Some people never leave. What? Never mind. This way. Val Helena leads me through the crowded streets, and we pass a couple of people who wrinkle their noses at us. They must be players, because I overhear one of them mutter something derogatory about gamers as she eyeballs me. You come here a lot? I ask Val Helena, still a bit awestruck by her transformation from towering half-giant paladin to supersized hot soccer mom. Not if I can help it. It's not really my thing. She grins down at me. But I do try to look the part when I'm here. As much as a half-giant can, anyway. Why half-giant, by the way? Not a lot of people go for them. She shrugs. Occupational hazard. When you're a guild leader, it helps to be the biggest thing in the room. Especially when you're a tank. I can't argue with the logic, and hope my puny size doesn't cause issues later. We pass a few more players who are dressed like prostitutes, and I get a sick feeling in my stomach. Is this where Mom spends most of her time as well? The idea has me praying that I don't somehow run into her in here. We finally enter a clothing store, and Val Helena starts browsing through the racks. How old are you, anyway? 17, I say. And where's the date? Her house. I'm coming over for dinner. Hmm, she says, still flipping through the rack, which spins to reveal a never-ending assortment of clothes.
Parents will be involved then. Good to know.
She motions to a raised circular platform that is partially enclosed by a set of three mirrors.
Go stand in the preview booth.
I do so, and my ninja outfit vanishes to be replaced by a set of well-cut jeans, a polo shirt, and a nice-looking belt with brown shoes.
Wow. Nice.
Val Helena gives an approving nod.
I think that looks good on you.
You think so? I say, checking myself out in the mirrors.
Very much.
Thanks. I turn back to her.
How is this supposed to help me, exactly? I need clothes in real life. Am I supposed to try to match this in the retail stores or something?
You don't need to, Val Helena says.
It's all the same code. Just save your preview and you can send it to your nanoprocessor to print.
What? I had no idea that was even possible.
So I could make my ninja outfit if I wanted to.
She shrugs.
I wouldn't recommend going on your date in it, but yeah.
I laugh at that.
Wow. Thanks so much for this, Val. I would have had to ask my mom for help without you.
That gets me a goddess laugh.
Hey, I'm probably not that far in age from her, so don't go thinking you got a better deal.
What?
How old are you?
She gives me an eye roll.
Never ask a woman that question, Reese.
Never. She saunters over to me and inspects me with another approving smile.
You look good, though. If you're half this good-looking in real life, Gilly's a lucky girl indeed.
I laugh and blush at that. It hadn't crossed my mind yet, but I wonder what Gilly will look like in real life.
The default avatar is basically a copy of you, but you can alter it.
The fact that I hadn't really altered mine, save for my body, gives me a bit of hope that Gilly might think I'm attractive the way Val Helena does.
Thanks, Val, I say, and give her a great big hug. You're the best.
She ruffles my hair.
Knock 'em dead, Tiger.
After a couple hours of well-needed sleep, I put my Shiba's Fang up for auction. It sells almost immediately. I net 237,500 after the 5% fee, and the credits drop into my personal account. Part of me wonders if I could have sold it for even higher, but 250K was 50K above all the offers I'd already gotten, so I'm satisfied that I got a pretty good deal. To think I just made so much money blows my mind a bit, but now I have to spend some as well. The outfit Val Helena picked out for me comes to around 17K when I drag it to the nanoprocessor for a quote. I verify a couple of options to make sure it's set to fit my body and not my characters, and then check to make sure Mom is still online and in her rig before I hit print. Not that I want to hide this from her. After our talk earlier, I actually can't wait to tell her that I have a date with a real girl. But I want to surprise her with it by dressing up first. I'm about to hit confirm when I remember something else. The plush Shiba toy. That would make a great gift for Gilly. I wonder if it will work the way Val Helena said. I pull up my character inventory and drag the item along with my clothes to try it. My total jumps to 19K.
All right, it works.
I hit confirm and the items begin to print. But then an odd message pops up. Due to excessive recent hard purchases, this account has been placed on a temporary hard credit limit of 10,000 credits per day for security reasons. Virtual transactions remain unrestricted. Thank you.
What the heck?
I've never seen anything like that before, but then again, I've never really shopped much before, either. Maybe buying the hoodie and tech visor last night, along with this outfit today, triggered some kind of anti-fraud mechanism. At least it allowed me to get my outfit for now. I would have been out of luck if that limit had kicked in earlier. It said temporary, so it's probably just a 24-hour thing. But that's okay. I'm not planning to buy any more clothes in that time. In-game gear is expensive enough, but real-life clothing is astronomical. I log out and grab my stuff off the printer with help from Mutt and Jeff, just in case Mom decides to log out right when I'm doing it. I then get dressed and send Mom a message that I have something I need to tell her. I hobble to the living room and wait with butterflies in my stomach as she slowly takes off her rig. When she does, I give her a big, ta-da! She looks bewildered.
What's going on?
I got a date, Ma, I say with a big goofy grin, showing off my new threads. She stares at me a moment more, and then laughs, still looking confused.
What? A date, Mom?
I say again. With this girl, Gilly, that I know from in-game. She invited me over to her parents' house for dinner tonight, so I bought a new outfit. What do you think? She still looks like she can't believe it. Then she claps both hands over her nose and mouth. I see tears in her eyes, but I can't tell if she's happy or sad. Mom? She wipes her face quickly and laughs again.
Sorry, I just... Wow. That's great news, Ryan. And you look so handsome. I'm so happy for you. Tell me more about this girl.
I give her the short version on Gilly, careful to leave out any parts that might lead to questions about my present circumstances. It probably doesn't matter anyway. Mom seems so thrilled that I've made a real-life friend, and a girl one at that, that she'd probably be okay if I told her Gilly was a serial killer. But then her glow fades a little when she asks,
Does she know about your...
Yeah, I say quickly. She knows about Mutt and Jeff. Technically, anyway. Her smile returns.
Oh, this is just so great, honey. You're growing up so fast. Come over here.
I do, and she gives me the biggest, longest hug ever. So long, I start to wonder if she's ever going to let me go.
This has been the best surprise ever, she says finally. Come on, I'll walk you there. I'd like to meet this young lady.
Uh-oh. Come on, Mom, I tease her.
How's it going to look? Me showing up to a date with a beautiful woman already on my arm.
She chuckles.
Okay, I won't cramp your style, you charmer, you. But maybe Mike could...
Mom!
All right. She relents. I get it. You're 17. I'm sure you can operate the lift by yourself. What's her address so I can check up on you in case it gets late?
I tell her, and she whistles.
Level 322. Sounds like a keeper. Mom!
Okay, you have fun. I will.
Oh, have you seen Mike, by the way?
My mood instantly sours as I'm reminded of my dilemma, but I put on a smile.
Yeah, he sent me a message earlier. He's cool.
Her smile returns, and I hobble away before she can ask any more questions. The ride down to level 322 takes longer than I expected. The car stops about 5 times to let people on and off, especially so when it reaches the main hub at level 100. When I finally exit the elevator some 20 minutes later, I think I've been transported to somewhere inside Crystal Shards. A hologram is projected onto the roof of the tunnel, giving the illusion of a twilit sky. Trees, grass, and a fountain form a park that runs down the center of the tunnel. I'm sure they can't be real, but they look pretty great to me either way. On either side of the park are walkways that lead to the halves lining the tunnel walls, but the hatches are spaced super far apart here. Where most levels have over 100 halves per tunnel, this one looks to have maybe 20 at most. I stash Mutt and Jeff close to the lift, and then my stomach starts doing flip-flops as I head toward hab number 12. Crazy thoughts enter my mind, like, what if Gilly looks nothing like her character? What if she's ugly and I'm not attracted to her? What if she's not attracted to me? It's all superficial, I know, but still. What happens if the sparks don't fly in real life? The thought is almost enough to make me contemplate calling it off. Is reality worth shattering the illusion? But then I remember I'm here for a much bigger reason. I need to tell Gilly about what I saw with my brother last night and explain why my timetable just got moved up to the extreme. I reach number 12 and steel myself as I press the buzzer for the door. Nervous seconds go past until finally the hatch opens. Gilly is standing there. My heart soars with relief when I see she looks almost exactly like her character, right down to the green eyes. She's a bit shorter, maybe, but then so am I. Her haircut is similar to her avatar's, and her smile is irrefutably hers.
Reese?
She says cautiously. I almost forget how to speak.
Yes, it's me, Reese, or Ryan.
An awkward pause takes hold as we gawk at one another. I notice she's in an actual dress, and that it looks brilliant on her. She never wears dresses in-game. She has makeup on, too. And her hair is shiny, like she's just had it styled. Perhaps this is what she's been doing all day.
You look even better in person, she says finally, and I see an all-too-familiar grin that assures me I'm talking to the same Gilly I've spent over a zillion hours with in-game.
It breaks the ice, and I laugh.
I was going to say the same thing.
Wow, you look great.
Come on in,
she says, and pulls the hatch wide open. As I enter, I feel like I've been transported to Crystal Shards for a second time. Gilly's living room must be as big as my whole house. Faux hardwood floors, synthetic window lighting, and that's just the room itself. Inside it are a couple of black leather couches, sat around a glass coffee table, and to the back of the room a fireplace glows with what I assume is another hologram. Then again, with what I've seen thus far, I wouldn't be surprised if it were real too.
Wow, I say, unable to contain myself.
It must embarrass Gilly a little, because she shrugs sheepishly.
Yeah, my mom likes to shop.
Oh, I say, eager to get off the topic. That reminds me, I got you something. I present her with the plush Shiva doll I've been hiding behind my back. Her big green eyes light up, and she squeals.
Aw, it's so cute! Thank you!
Gilly throws her arms around me in a hug. We've hugged in-game before, but it's never felt quite like this. I can feel her weight against me, and even her heartbeat, though I'm probably feeling more of my own. She pulls away and hugs the doll.
How did you know I loved cats?
What? I say. Don't all girls love cats? She snickers. It's a drop, actually. I got it earlier today. I soloed Sheba.
Sheba?
Her mouth drops open a little.
You mean an LM?
I nod, grinning like a fool.
I'll tell you all about... So, is this the young man?
A woman's voice interrupts me. I turn to see a middle-aged couple entering the room. Gilly's mom and dad. Gilly's mother looks like an older version of her, with a touch of silver to her dark hair. She greets me with a handshake.
So nice to meet you. Reese, was it?
Sure, yes. Reese is fine.
It's Ryan, Mom,
Gilly corrects her with a playful eye roll.
Ryan, these are my parents.
I look to Gilly's dad next. He's a tall, somewhat portly guy. He has a full beard streaked with gray, and for some reason he looks kind of familiar to me. He extends his hand, and when I grip it, his shake is firm.
Pleased to meet you, son, he says with a smile. Jill's mentioned a lot about you.
Oh, has she?
I feel like a bit of a heel. My mom only knew about Gilly a couple hours ago.
Well, it's nice to meet you too, Mr. and Mrs.
Holy crap. I've only just realized I don't know Gilly's last name.
Peters,
her dad says quickly with a warm smile. But you can call me Bruce. The floor drops out from under me as the recognition hits. It's Bruce. The same Bruce my brother was talking to last night. My heart hits my throat. I can't believe this. It's like a sick joke. Gilly's father is the man who's forcing my brother to risk his life.
Come on, Bruce says casually, jerking his head toward the kitchen. Dinner's ready.
Chapter 28. Dinner. Dinner with Gilly's parents is simultaneously the most wonderful and terrifying experience I've had in my entire life. I'm practically sweating bullets by the time Gilly's mom places a heaping bowl of spaghetti and meatballs in front of me. It looks and smells like something that should only exist in-game.
Hope you like Italian, Bruce says with a smile.
I nod like an idiot, and after Bruce says grace, I dive into the food like I've never eaten before, half from nerves and half from the way it's making my mouth salivate. I chomp into a meatball that's smothered with sauce and literally let out a moan as the food fills my mouth with a pleasure like no other. I try not to wolf down my meal too fast, but it's like telling a man who's dying of thirst to sip and not chug. I'm halfway through my plate before everyone else has barely had their first forkful. I only stop when I notice them all staring at me like I'm a rabid dog. Gilly just grins, though.
Good, huh?
I nod stupidly again. My mouth full of spaghetti.
Mm-hmm. Plenty more, if you'd like, Gilly's mom says.
I could probably finish off all their plates, but I don't want to seem like a pig. Plus, food like this must cost around 2,000 credits a plate.
This is plenty, thank you.
Dinner continues on, but my heart beats with trepidation the entire time. In the back of my mind, I'm still trying to figure out what the heck I can say to Gilly's parents, and, more importantly, what I shouldn't say. As much as I'd like to find out what Bruce has got my brother doing and why, I can't give away anything that might tip him off to me being the kid who was eavesdropping on them.
So, tell me about yourself, Ryan, Bruce says in between bites. Where's your family from?
The upper levels, I say, leaving it vague. Above the main hub a bit.
Bruce nods politely.
Any siblings?
Oh, crap. I didn't expect a question like this. I grab my drink and take a chug of delicious fruit punch to buy some time. Mike and I share a resemblance. Not too close with his present haircut, but the eyes are a dead giveaway. If Bruce finds out we're brothers, I don't know where that might lead. But I can't lie about not having a brother in front of Gilly, either.
Unfortunately, yes, I say. We can't all be as lucky as Gilly. I mean, Jill.
I crack a smile, and they laugh at my joke.
It's okay to call her Gilly, by the way. Bruce jerks a thumb toward her. We were calling her that long before you.
What? Gilly rolls her eyes.
Dad, please don't.
It's her nickname, he continues, ignoring her. When she was a toddler, we used to call her Jilly, but when we'd ask her to say her name, she could only pronounce it as Gilly. Guess it kind of stuck.
Gilly shakes her head, exasperated while we all share a laugh. The look on her face is priceless. It makes me like her even more.
So, Gilly tells me you're both in maintenance? I ask, steering the conversation further away from me.
Gilly's parents look at one another and chuckle.
That's one way to put it. Gilly's mom says. Bruce is the head of physical infrastructure for the city. I'm his right hand.
And my left, Bruce adds with a grin.
Oh, cool, I say, nodding. I'm itching to ask more questions, like what he actually does, and what he's doing sending my brother to the surface.
And how about your parents? Gilly's mom asks. What do they do?
Oh, Mom,
Gilly says quickly.
Ryan's dad is...
It's okay, I cut her off. My dad died when I was young, and my mom works from home. Retail.
Sorry to hear that, son, Bruce says.
Thankfully, Gilly hasn't mentioned my mom being sick. That'd be another set of dots that'd be way too easy to connect me to my brother with. I change the subject to ensure it doesn't happen.
Gilly mentioned stuff is always breaking down in the city.
Boy, is it ever.
Bruce twirls his last meatball with some spaghetti.
You wouldn't think most of this stuff is supposed to be automated, the way it works. Or doesn't, rather.
Then I remember something that both he and Gilly mentioned separately. Or perhaps it wasn't Bruce who mentioned it. Maybe it was that guy Dennis who was with him. Nevertheless, the word was the same.
Does that have anything to do with the nano shards? I remember Gilly mentioning them earlier, and I wanted to ask you what they were.
Bruce pauses mid-bite and shoots a glance at Gilly, as does her mother. Gilly shrugs.
What? You two are always mumbling about them.
Bruce clears his throat and smiles.
Well, they're kind of like batteries, but they store nano-machines instead of electricity.
Seems I might have gotten him on the back foot with that one. I decide to press my luck a little further.
Oh, so we're running low on them then?
Huh?
On the nanoshards. To fix everything.
Bruce swallows like I've just asked him if the world is about to end. He laughs, probably to hide his discomfort.
Something like that.
Hope you have room for dessert.
Gilly's mom suddenly stands and collects my empty plate.
We have apple pie and ice cream.
Sounds delicious, Bruce says, standing as well. Let me help you, dear.
They hustle away, and I wonder if maybe I pushed that last question too far. Even if I did, though, perhaps it was a good thing. It seems to keep them from asking me any further questions. We enjoy dessert, and this time I don't shy away from seconds.
Why don't you two go have a sit in the living room? Bruce says when we're done. We'll clean up in here. We've got some great movies you can stream on the HoloViewer.
Thanks, I say.
Bruce seems like a genuinely nice guy. But still, he's holding a hatchet over my brother's head to get these nano-shards, or whatever they are, from the surface, it seems. A dark part of me wonders if maybe he sent my mom to the surface to do the same. Gilly distracts me from my thoughts by taking my hand. She leads me into the living room and onto one of the couches. It's a welcome distraction. I've been waiting my whole life for something like this. A chance to sit alone with Gilly, a girl I really like, who likes me back, and watch a movie together, in real life. It's like a dream come true. Gilly picks something from the holoviewer and we start to watch. It's a pre-war action comedy I've seen before, but I don't mind. Gilly snuggles into me. She places my arm over her shoulders. I think I'm in heaven.
So, what did you need to tell me? Gilly says after a bit.
I'm so in the moment that I have no clue what she's talking about.
Huh? You said you needed to tell me something in person. About your brother?
Oh, crap. I nearly forgot all about that. My mind is running a mile a minute. What am I supposed to tell her? Hey, Gilly, your dad is forcing my brother to go to the surface. Could you talk to him for me? There's no way I can mention her father, but I suppose I could still tell her everything else. Mike's going to do something really dangerous to get Mom's surgery done. Her eyes widen with concern.
Like what?
I'm not too sure, I say, although it's now half a lie since I do have some inkling. But he's going to do it in a few days. I need to get the money for Mom's operation before then. If he sees Mom cured, I'm sure he won't go through with it.
You said you need it in a couple of days?
Her voice strains with incredulity. And then she says something that both shocks and warms me.
What the heck are you doing here, then? You need to be leveling.
I chuckle. My number one cheerleader. She elbows me.
Hey, I'm serious. You can't let your crazy brother do something stupid like that. We need to go make this money.
It touches me when she uses the word we. It makes me think that Gilly really is the best girl in the world. After all the crap I've put her through, she still got my back 100%. Well, I did make around 250K from killing Sheba, I say, but then sigh. Still a long way from 3.5 million, though. Gilly barely seems to be listening to me anymore.
Okay, I got a plan. I'm going to be your manager.
My what?
I'm going to manage your money and drops for you. I do know the market's pretty good, you know. Plus, I'll map out the best things for you to kill for money and leveling at the same time.
I nod. That actually sounds like a decent plan. I suck at all that stuff, but Gilly thrives on it. This is a much better way for her to help me than leveling as a healer.
All right. Okay, let's do it,
she says, and she gets up from the couch.
Mom, Dad, Ryan's gotta leave.
What? I say, bewildered.
Right now? Hey, she pulls me up off the couch. We got the rest of our lives to watch movies together, but you've only got one brother and one mom. So go home, log in, and get your butt in gear. I'll do some research while you're on your way.
Are you serious? She gives me the eye.
Does it sound like I'm joking?
I laugh nervously. Sounds like this is going to be an interesting development in our relationship.
Oh!
Her eyes pop open.
Speaking of that.
She grabs me by the collar and pulls my lips to hers. The kiss takes me by surprise, as does my body's reaction to it. We've kissed in-game before, but just like the hug, this feels way different. Way better. She breaks it off just before her parents enter the living room to say goodbye. Leaving a little early? Bruce asks.
We're going to continue the rest of the date online, Gilly says.
Bruce shares a puzzled look with his wife and then chuckles. Guess you guys do it differently these days. It was great meeting you, Ryan. He extends his hand and I shake it.
Same. Give our regards to your mother,
Gilly's mom says, and I shake her hand as well. I then give Gilly a warm hug and a wave as I leave through the door. Right as I do, Bruce puts his hand on my shoulder and leans in to whisper to me. Do me a favor and don't mention those nano shards to anyone else, will you? They're sort of a back-of-the-shop kind of thing. I nod.
Okay, sure. No problem.
He then squeezes my shoulder with a smile,
and closes the door behind me.
Chapter 29. Grinding Gears. When I get back home, my mom is waiting up, and apparently quite excited, judging by the way she's grinning at me as I hobble through the door with Mutt and Jeff.
So, how was it?
She asks, beaming.
It went great, Mom.
I can barely contain my excitement and want to tell her everything, or at least the stuff I can talk to her about anyway. I spend about 10 minutes recapping dinner with her, and the sparkle that fills her eyes as she listens means the world to me. I tell her about Gilly, her parents, their amazing house, and the awesome food. Mom especially laughs when I tell her about how Gilly got her name.
You'll have to invite her over here sometime. I really want to meet her.
Definitely, I say. But then I hesitate. I wonder what Gilly might think of our rundown house compared to hers. But honestly, I don't think she'd mind at all. Gilly is Gilly. She's never been one for material stuff.
Hey, I've got to go meet her online, Ma. We're continuing our date virtually.
Mom laughs.
You crazy kids.
As I go to leave, a question burns in the back of my mind.
Hey, Mom, do you happen to know her dad?
I had purposefully left his name and details out earlier, but now I just have to know.
His name is Bruce Peters. He's head of infrastructure?
Her face goes unreadable for a moment.
That's her father?
Yeah. Damn, maybe he did work with my mom. Maybe he forced her to go to the surface, just like he's doing to my brother. My stomach sours a bit. I was really starting to like Gilly's dad, too. But maybe he's the reason my mom has cancer.
You know him?
Of course I know him.
So you worked with him? When you were doing the vents and stuff?
Ryan, everyone should know him. Don't you know who he is? This one takes me totally off guard.
No. Should I?
She lets out a laugh.
I really need to contact the board and complain about the education feeds. Ryan, he's the chairman of the board. He's basically like our president.
My legs go woozy, and I'm glad I've got Mutt and Jeff for support.
What? Oh my goodness! My mom claps her hands together, laughing. My son is dating the chairman's daughter, and he doesn't even know it!
Chairman's daughter? Holy crap. Then that makes Gilly like some kind of princess. Well, not really, but close.
Holy cow.
And no, I never worked with him, Mom says, and I feel a great relief lift off my shoulders. I think he worked with your father when they were younger, though. My stomach flips again. This stirs up a whole new set of questions. Bruce knew my dad?
You'd better go log on now, hon, my mom says as she starts to put her rig back on. You shouldn't keep the chairman's daughter waiting.
I log on with my head still spinning. As soon as I materialize at the main spawn point in Swift Tide, I send a message to Gilly.
Me. Hey, you didn't tell me who your dad was.
Gilly.
Huh?
Me.
He's the chairman of the board?
Gilly.
Oh yeah, lol. Well, that's not really his main job. It's more just like an added responsibility.
Me. But that means he's, like, in charge, right? Gilly.
I guess. Anyway, come meet me on the step of Andor. I've got a way for you to make 1,000,000 credits tonight.
I fast travel to see Gilly, but I'm still struggling to figure out how I can possibly make 1,000,000 credits in only one night. As I materialize, I see she's already waiting for me, and I check to make sure my live stream is off. I don't want to expose Gilly to the world like that, especially now that I know she's a celebrity. Well, sorta. Gilly's dressed in her level 12 mage gear and looks as cute and sexy as ever, especially with her witch's hat. She runs over and gives me a quick hug and kiss before yanking on my arm.
Come on, we're headed east.
I laugh as she drags me along and invite her to my party.
Where are we going? To the Grimstone Canyon.
She accepts the request.
We're going to do a jumping quest tonight.
What's a jumping quest?
One of the most horrible, annoying things ever invented by the devs, Gilly says as she marches through the rock-filled terrain by my side. Honestly, I don't even know why it exists. Practically no one ever does it.
Oh, I say. So then why are we going to do it? And what exactly is it?
Well, technically, you're going to be doing it, Gilly clarifies. And as for what they are, think of it like being in an Indiana Jones movie.
Oh, what? She sighs.
Never mind. You'll see when we get there.
We continue our journey through the rocky steppe, which slowly transforms into low hills. After a few minutes, we finally reach a sheer cliff face that looks like it's made out of solid granite. It towers above us by some 300 feet and blocks out the sun as we draw close to its base. I whistle as I gaze up at it. I hope we don't need to climb this thing.
Nope,
she says, thankfully.
But there will be some climbing involved. Follow me.
We traverse the cliff face until it opens up in a crack that's as wide as the tunnel for my hab. I marvel at how the sheer walls rise up about us. They leave only a sliver of sky at the very top as we travel through. The words Grimstone Canyon appear over my vision. Are there any aggressive monsters here? I ask. And what level is this place?
Not where we're going, Gilly says. And don't worry about the level. You could do this quest as a level one.
We continue on until we discover a set of stone steps carved right into the canyon wall. Gilly takes the lead and bravely plows ahead up the narrow, roughly hewn steps. I follow her, but start to feel somewhat queasy from the height as we get to the midpoint. Just then, I get a private message which serves as a timely distraction. Val Helena.
Hey, I see that you're back. How'd the date go?
Me.
Excellent. I'm still on it.
Val Helena.
Oh, so I see.
I guess she must have done a search for me and saw us in party or something.
Val Helena. Where are you two headed?
Me.
To do a jumping quest thing.
Val Helena.
A jumping quest? LOL. Have fun. TTYL.
I'm starting to get a bad feeling about this quest. Gilly said it's level one, though, so what could be so hard about it? We find a hole in the rock face at the top of the steps, and by the time we reach it, I'm dying to enter. Once inside, we travel down a tight passageway, and I feel the ground tremble beneath my feet. I fear it might be a monster heading toward us, so I pull Gilly back.
Hold up, I think something's coming.
Huh?
Don't you feel that?
I say. The ground is shaking.
Oh, yeah. That's the quest. Come on.
Golden-colored light begins to fill the passageway from an unknown source as we continue on. The trembling beneath my feet gets stronger, but also more distinct and rhythmical. It's definitely not a monster. It feels more like big pieces of equipment slamming together. The tunnel ends, opening up into an enormous cavern that's as big as the one Gruzug was in. But where that one was empty, this one is filled with something that resembles the insides of a giant clock. Two sets of massive cogwheels rotate slowly in the center of the cavern, elevated by a combination of rocky spires and steel girders. The vibration I felt is from a series of massive hammers that slam down on top of an iron bridge. The bridge leads to a maze of gears and other moving parts. It looks and sounds like some kind of 18th century factory, with its rhythmic banging and the constant squeal and squeak of turning gears. At the very center of the massive contraption is the source of the golden light. It radiates from a single point a few stories above us and fills the entire cavern with an eerie yellow glow.
So this is it,
Gilly says, and points to the light source.
The objective is to touch that thing up there.
That's it?
Yes, but you have to do it by sticking to the pathway.
I shudder as I watch the spinning, slamming appendages.
So this is the thing that no one wants to do, huh?
Yep. And that's why you'll make a million credits if you can do it.
This quest gives 1 million credits?
No. The quest itself only gives around 100K, I think. But you get a gem at the end that's a prime ingredient in level 85 prestige gear.
What's that?
Really cool-looking stuff, like what Aiko was wearing. Anyway, high-level players will pay upwards of 1 million for the gem.
Wow.
There are only a few players who can even do this quest, and the quest resets every 6 months with a new pattern.
Sounds tough.
It'll be a breeze for you, though, and I'll be here to cheer you on. There's an observation path I can take.
I look again at the massive machinery slamming and banging before us. Where do I even start? Over here. Come on.
Gilly leads me further toward the rusted iron bridge that has hammer